My name is Emma, and I use she and her pronouns.
I am Gwyn, and I use she and her pronouns.
Hi, I'm Jessica, and I use she and her pronouns.
Hey, I'm Charlotte, they, them pronouns.
Hey, I'm Jessie, they, them.
And I'm Nicolette, and I use and them pronouns.
And we also have Cunning Minx with us from Polyamory Weekly. Cunning, would you like to Minx, would you like to introduce yourself?
Oh, sure. I am Cunning Minx. I'm the host and creator of the Poly Weekly podcast. And I never know what else to say.
What are your preferred pronouns?
She and her. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. We also have Go hanging out in the studio. And who's your friend?
Zand.
Zand. Great. So welcome, everyone. So tonight we are doing episode 3 of Trans and Poly, and we have returning with us, we have three guests who have various points on the spectrum of trans, poly, and kink. And then we also have a poly educator and host of, I think, the longest running polyamory podcast online, Polyamory Weekly. We're really honored to have everyone here, and we're going to just jump right into it with Nicolette. Nicolette has got a ton of questions, but before we do that, I'd like to give Cunning Minx a chance to just introduce herself and talk a little bit about her show. We're really honored to have you on with us today, Cunning Minx. Could you tell us a little bit about what you do in the community to educate people on poly issues, and about your show, and maybe a little bit of your backstory?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm Minx. I created and I host the Poly Weekly podcast. It's been running continuously since 2005 with over 500 episodes in production. And I started the podcast just a year or two after I had my first poly dating and falling in love experience. And there was much drama, as I'm sure that comes as a surprise to absolutely nobody who's ever tried to do polyamory for the first time. And, it's 2005, RSS had just come out. I saw my poly boyfriend, my first poly boyfriend at the time, doing it, asked him what it was. He said it was a podcast. I'm like, oh, talking, I can do that. And there was so much to talk about in the first year of poly, so it seemed like a natural fit. And, on episode 2, I already had people writing in and calling in with questions. And so we just sort of took it from there. And I always say, when people stop asking questions or stop saying that it's helpful, then I will very gladly shut down the podcast and have my nice weekend. But really, I'm just trying to help normalize poly and help people know that they're not alone, and that, you know, everybody telling you you're doing poly wrong, probably not. Or everybody telling you that polyamory is wrong, there are a lot of people doing it that are perfectly happy with it. And really, I just want to have, I want to be a resource so that people feel like they're not alone.
Thank you. And so part of the reason we wanted to have you on as a poly and kink educator is because this is our third in a series of ongoing conversations that we've had about polyamory and how it intersects with trans and gender queer identities. And there's something that maybe transgender and gender fluid folks bring that's unique to the poly communities. And so we wanted to just kind of have that conversation. Where do trans folks fit in to the poly community? Are there any unique challenges that we need to be aware of? And, you know, what are some of the questions that trans folks and gender fluid folks have that they want their poly peers and also maybe just people generally to know about. So I'm going to turn it over now to Nicolette. Nicolette is going to host for the rest of the show. So Nicolette, it's all yours.
All right. So yeah, the first question I wanted to open with, I think we talked a little bit about this on the previous shows, but have any of you experienced any intersection between your polyamory and your gender identity or your sexuality? And Cunning Minx, you're welcome to weigh in on this as well.
Well,
go for it.
last time, I personally mentioned that as a gender fluid person, I feel that polyamory is a part of my fluidic identity. It affects so many parts of my life. I'm on the ace spectrum, I'm bisexual, queer, whatever, and those things have changed through my life. You know, I was in a monogamous relationship for a long time, and there were times when I was quite happy with that. It was fine. But before that, I had a lot of trouble with monogamy. And so it's something that's changed throughout my life, like many aspects of myself. It's hard for me personally to separate these aspects out. And I've actually had a lot of debate with people over whether or not being poly makes one queer. Because for me, it's hard to separate any of it out. So anytime someone tries to take one piece of that identity, like being ace or being poly, and say that that's not part of the queer community, but the rest of you is, it can be difficult for me because I'm this big mosaic in terms of pieces of identity, and it can change daily, you know? So that's how it works out for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had some of those same conversations too about does poly make you queer? For me, I can't think of one without the other. Partly, I think, because I came to poly through starting to realize as a very late bloomer that I may be bisexual. Newsflash, I am. and me bringing this up to my partner and him saying, you know, hey, I want you to be the best you that you can. And that means exploring everything about yourself that you want to. And that's how we started talking about poly. And that was 8 years ago, and it's been amazing ever since. So for me, that you are very intricately connected.
I appreciate you brought that up because I used to have had problems with monogamy. I've been okay with it. When I have had problems with it, one of the issues I've had is like desiring a particular gender that I am not with. And that desire, no matter, like, it just doesn't go away once it like hooks itself in me, you know? I mean, it might. It's like I'm not in control of it, like my fluidity. And so it's like, you're with a particular gender, someone who's very strong in their gender, right? Very binary. And you're suddenly feeling not attracted to that gender. You still love the person, but sexually you now need to be fulfilled elsewise. if you can be poly, that obviously makes that easier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same with being ace, you know, like you might have a partner you're okay being sexual with, and then lots of people you're interested in, but you just don't want to have sex with. If they have partners they're being sexual with, then that can be okay for them.
Mm-hmm. So I have two questions. First of all, can you, for those who aren't familiar with it, can you explain what ace is?
Yeah, so ace is a shorthand term for the asexual spectrum. Asexual simply means that you don't experience sexual attraction. It doesn't really denote anything about your sex life other than that. You may or may not have sex. There's all types of asexuals. And between asexual, never experiencing sexual attraction, and allosexual, being able to experience any kind of sexual attraction, primary, secondary, is a whole world of gray ace. It's like what we call a gray asexual. And so ace is sort of a way to talk about anybody who's not purely allosexual, anybody who might have asexual tendencies or be, there's various kinds, demisexual, phrasexual, and I can go into that a little bit if you want, but it's a long explanation. Google will tell you.
Yeah.
And my other question was for Cunning Minx. I was wondering if you could address the question of how does the concept of polyamory fit into queer theory? Is polyamory part of the spectrum of queerness, or is it outside of queerness?
I'm not really sure that I'm qualified to answer that on an academic level. But one thing I do find is that people come to the poly community through a variety of channels. It's interesting. I was just furiously scribbling notes because you guys are giving me a lot. Sorry, you folks are giving me a lot to think about. And I personally came to poly through the kink and BDSM community. There are other people that come to it through the science fiction community, pagan community, bisexual, trans. There are all these different identities. So I don't think there's not one way that people discover it. And I think that while it's very often that these things go hand in hand, being queer, being bi, or being trans may go hand in hand with being poly. But surprisingly, that's not always the case. Interesting. One of you said, well, obviously poly is a way to do that. And my ears perked up and I'm like, it does seem obvious, but that may not be the case. I know that if I ever said that on my podcast, somebody would definitely write in and say that's not
the case. So, here you go. Well, I guess I would say it's a way. It's not the only way.
Yeah, that's true.
It is a way. But I think that the poly community, if there is such a thing, is that gives one a way to experience being queer or being trans or being bi that I think is a little bit more, do I want to say easier, more customizable, shall we say, than with something like monogamy.
I was going to say it's probably really coincidental, really. Oh, can you not hear me? Can you hear me now? All right. How about now? Is that better? All right. I was going to say it's probably more coincidental than anything about being poly and, you know, being trans or being queer or any of that stuff. I think, you know, you gravitate towards people of like minds and like souls. And me personally, I'm pansexual, so I don't really care about genders or anything like that. It's not really that big a deal on the whole spectrum of, you know, attraction. It's all about vibes and what you get from people when you're in rooms and things. And so I feel like, you know, you gravitate towards people that are like spirited. And so if you find that people are gravitating over in this area that are like you, you know, it happens to be poly. Well, it could have been anything. You know, it didn't really matter what that group was. It was like people that were like you. So.
Yeah, and one theory that I've had is, you know, maybe when people like us are more likely to explore our gender identity or our sexuality to figure out who we really are, then maybe that can lead to us figuring out some other aspects of our sexuality, like whether we're monogamous or polyamorous, whether we're into kink, things like that.
There's also just the exposure to the words. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people in mainstream society have never heard of any of this. Like, you asked me to explain what ACE is, right? Which I didn't even think about it because I'm pretty sure everyone in this room knows. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, we, like, my group of friends, you could do a Venn diagram of, like, you know, queer, neurodivergent, witch, like, you know, poly, all of, you know, kinky, all of it, and we'd all be in the center together. Mm-hmm. I think that's very true, that there's a lot of overlap in those groups, like you said, Jessica. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that also, you know, reminds me of one of the things I wanted to talk about in regards to, like, the stigma surrounding polyamory. One of the misunderstandings I think that I see a lot is that polyamory is only for people who are, like, bi or pan, or that people who are bi or pan are more likely to be poly or even to be cheaters. Like, I've seen a lot of people claim that. Like, I remember this this article I was reading about Johnny Depp and his wife, Amber Heard, I think was her name, and they said something about her cheating on her husband, and they said, well, he should have known that if she was bisexual, that she would be more likely to cheat on him. I was like, are you serious?
No.
Yes, because straight people never cheat on their husband.
All right.
Oh, my goodness. It never happens.
One thing I feel like, for me, when I've been in these conversations, if poly is queer, the people who are poly who say no, it tends to come in one of two camps. Either there's homophobia going on, they don't want to be associated with the community, or opposite, they feel like they're taking something away from us, like they're trying to say that their struggles are the same as trans struggles or something. And I've always found that really interesting, because they will, in the same breath, describe, you know, all of the discrimination that they experience in their daily lives or the jobs that they've lost or whatever. I'd be like, but, you know, that's not as bad as, and they'll have a whole list of things that queer people must go through all the time. I'm like, I've never experienced any of that, yo.
I'm a chime in on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Some people are just hungry to have a life and they'll gravitate to whatever seems most substantial and then X out the things that they just don't, that aren't beneficial in all realms of life. Like, yeah, I'm polyamorous, but only with straight people, like mainly straight people, but I have gay sex, but they're straight. they have straight relationships. That's even if you get into that conversation. And when I was thinking about what we were talking about, I'm like, groups. I'm like, some people don't bring that part of your sexuality out of you. Like, you're not going to be monogamous with every person you go out with. That's just not the case. You don't want to be with, when you're usually going to be monogamous with someone, it's like, yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
And then with that one, you may be practicing a poly situation, but you're still with that one. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean it's like faithfulness, cheating is cheating. Cheating is like when you go on a video game and you get codes so that way you have things that you didn't earn. So a cheater is someone in a relationship that gets the benefit of having the relationship and then goes and like doesn't tell or inform and has all these other things that are going on outside of the relationship. That's cheating.
Yeah. And and that's part of, you know, some of the stigma that I wanted to talk about is, you know, I'll hear people say things like, oh, polyamory is just cheating. It's just an excuse to cheat. I'm like, no, cheating is a very distinct thing where you're going behind your partner's back and doing stuff without their permission or consent, without their knowledge. And, you know, that's completely different from what polyamory is. Polyamory involves the knowledge and consent of everyone involved.
I've always found it interesting to see how people will on at the same time say that poly is essentially cheating or think that I'll be pro their cheating and at the same time assume that you can't cheat in poly. Like, right. It's a weird dichotomy, right? And you're like, okay, so first of all, we are very anti-cheating. Like, I am judging you so hard right now. That's the only thing I'm going to judge a person about just about is cheating. And second of all, like, I have been cheated on in poly. It happens. There are agreements, there's, you know, barrier agreements, there's all sorts of things that you can do to make your partner feel that you have betrayed them, that you've betrayed the relationship, the core of it somehow. And, you know, there's lots of people that get, quote unquote, cheated on in monogamous relationships in that somebody has technically had sex with someone else. But for whatever reason, it doesn't trip that feeling. You know, maybe they were distant at the time and they were going through a really rough time and they thought they were about to break up or something. They're like, you know, I can forgive it because, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's just, but like the idea that we agree to have sex with other people is the only thing that denotes cheating or not. You know, it's like, it's about your emotional agreements.
So let's ask our poly experts about this subject, because I think it's one of the things people wonder about the most with monogamous relationships. And with poly is, what is cheating in the context of polyamory? How do you define cheating? And how do folks in polyamorous relationships work with having multiple desires?
You know, if you'd asked me when I started the podcast, I would have a really different question, or even 5 or 10 years ago. I learned so much from my listeners who were very generous with their feedback. And I think my answer is that in any type of relationship, whether it be mono, poly, or anything else, the way that cheating is defined is the way it's defined by the people participating in the relationship. It took me a long time to figure out that, well, yeah, you can cheat in a poly relationship. I admit that wasn't obvious to me at first either. But there are different ways to cheat in monogamous relationships, for example. Mm-hmm. I remember I had a wonderful monogamous friend who discovered her husband's porn stash. And she was so upset because she felt that he wanted to have sex with girls in the magazines instead of with her, and that was an insult to her. So she threw out his porn. So to her, porn was cheating. Now, I'm sure this wasn't written in their vows and they'd never actually talk about it. Which, by the way, I think everybody should talk about what cheating is to you with all of your partners.
Oh, yeah.
But for other people, there are plenty of monogamous people for whom porn would not be cheating, or kissing wouldn't be cheating, or having a showmance or a poly for the con, as long as it's out of town, wouldn't be cheating. Or anything above the waist isn't cheating. Or if you don't love them, isn't cheating. Everybody defines cheating differently. It's both in mono and poly and everything in between. You just have to define it so that everybody knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said what I said about, you know, emotional intimacy and betrayal, because I feel like it's not like, yeah, it's between each two people. It's when you feel like the other person has broken the agreement you thought you had. And, you know, in poly, we use agreements like with a capital A. It's like an official thing. But I sort of mean that in a more general sense, you know. In any relationship, like a friendship, you have this sort of unspoken agreement about what the relationship means to both of you. And sometimes you talk that out, sometimes you don't.
That's the hard part.
Yeah, yeah, it's often unspoken. And I think in romantic and sexual relationships, we're getting to this point where we realize by speaking it, you're more likely to have success, right? And I was going to say, you know, you asked us how do we define cheating? And in, you know, I'm sorry, what was your name again? The podcast expert?
Minx.
Minx mentioned, yep, you know, that it's for everyone to decide, but there are some sort of basics in poly. Like I said, if you have an agreement, capital A, and you break it, that's cheating, period, whatever the agreement is, right? And again, everyone reacts to cheating differently, but that in the poly community is pretty much considered cheating. And the big one that I think we all kind of start with is whether or not you're using protection. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many people's safety at risk here, and this is not actually, this is the only one that's not only about emotional intimacy, right? This is about people's health. This is about their lives. This is like about death and life. And so like, we're all pretty serious about that. Mm-hmm. When you break a barrier agreement, that is to me like the worst level of cheating. And it like, that's like, that's it. We're not having sex at like potentially ever again, but you know.
It is definitely the quickest way to get your partners and everybody that they tell about it mad at you and painted as the villain, that's for sure. But I want to circle back to emotional cheating. It also took me a long time to figure out that for many people, emotional cheating brings up that level of judgment and pain and anger. Like, it doesn't matter that you didn't have sex with a person, or if you did, that you did use a condom, or even that for some people, having what we coin emotional cheating, where you are having some type of intimate connection, even if there is absolutely nothing physical, to some people, that is a bigger violation than if you had had sex without a condom. Which is why I say, you know, I'm actually not a big fan of agreements. I think that everybody who's ever had a relationship agreement has had it broken, and then you have a whole lot to deal with. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not saying, you know, don't have any agreements at all, but I think that agreements are really more about how are we going to deal with this situation when it happens, because it's probably going to be a when and not an if, right? So I think the discussions around that, about what are we going to do when this happens and how are we going to react when that happens, I think those discussions and that communication is way more important than just slapping down the rule and expecting everybody's going to abide by it and then causing a lot of drama when someone doesn't. Because let's face it, we're human. Everybody's going to break that agreement at some point. We just are.
Yeah, and this also leads me to another question I was going to ask at some point. I do want to talk about jealousy, because that does occur in poly relationships as well, at least in some of them anyway. So have any of you ever experienced jealousy? And if so, how do you handle that?
I'm sorry. I'm one of those people that if jealousy is in the relationship, I don't want to be in the relationship. Mm. Some people have an attachment to jealousy as if it's an addiction. It's something that gets them off. It's not even, so like cheating is going to happen and they're not going to tell you, they'll sign the agreement. But guess what? Their main fetish is jealousy, anger, things that come from a volatile place. And that really points at something that has to be dealt with them individually and personally. And maybe they just need to be in a group where they do that. But if it's not said, that's the whole point of the jealousy fetish thing, is that it's not said. It is a secret. It's the taboo. That's what it is. I don't get jealous often. It hardly ever happens. If it happens, I realize something chemically is wrong. I do not know why would I even look at someone else and be like, I just feel like an animaniac. I'm like, that's not real. That's, I can't have that. But I've been around other jealous people. And the thing is, when you see it, it's like this unspoken thing, but it's like clear as freaking day. You're like, wow, this person reacted to that like that and then switched it up. They're so good at hiding it, you know? So it's like, what do I do with the jealousy? You can use it and play with it, but I wouldn't. It's like, you know, femme fatale. Like, some people will go far, and it's because, you know, it's that edge. It's the edge, and I can't. I'm one of those. I'm from the opposite of that. But those who feed into it and love it, more power to you.
Right. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good thing. I'm just saying this is something that does often happen in both monogamous and poly relationships. And, you know, I think I talked a little bit about this on the last show, but like in my case, you know, I experience compersion when I see my partners with other partners. It makes me happy to know that they're happy. Sorry, that's what compersion means for anyone who doesn't know. It's experiencing joy from seeing another person's joy. So, you know, that makes me happy. But the only times I really experience jealousy are if I feel like I'm not getting enough attention and time with, you know, any of my partners or a single partner. And the way I handle that is by communicating with that partner, hey, I feel like I'm not spending enough time with you. I feel like you're not paying enough attention to me. Can we work this out so that I feel like I'm getting equal time here? Mm-hmm.
I think one of my favorite poly books that I read when my partner and I were first starting had something that really resonated with me, and that was that each person is not responsible for their partner's jealous feelings. Mm-hmm. That your jealousy isn't your partner's problem. It's something to work out together. If you're feeling jealous, that, you know, you need to do some self-examining and figure out where that's coming from. You certainly have the right, and hopefully your partner will honor any reassurances that you need, and maybe reprioritizing time. But you got to own your own jealousy. You can't be jealous and throw that on someone else and say, you're being a bad partner. You deal with this feeling that I'm having.
I actually think that's one of the gifts of polyamory. Jealousy is an emotion we're not really taught to look at as children and examine and think about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I became polyamorous, that became a requirement. And the thing that everyone says and that you start to think about is that jealousy is about insecurity. It's not about the other people. It's about you. And so for me, two important things have happened. Being able to look inward and realize how much that is true and say, okay, what insecurities am I feeling right now? Is that really even about my partner? Like, what do I need to work on? And even if it is about my partner, what can I do before even approaching someone else about it to begin working on those feelings?
Yeah.
I'm not as sure what to do about other people's jealousy, but that's what I do about mine. And the other second thing that's been important is, for me, I think there's a difference between jealousy and envy. And realizing that has been very strange, because for me, jealousy is sort of being jealous that other person is doing it and being like, I don't want them to have that. Mm-hmm. Envy is simply saying, like, it's cool that you have that. Can I have it too?
I
get envious more than I get jealous. Mostly I get jealous of other poly people, or envious of other poly people too. I'm like, not so envious of my metamor so much as I am of sometimes of other people's configurations or situations, or like their kitchen table poly looks so cute. Right?
So I just need to do another term clarification. Can you, Minx, can you please explain to us what is a metamor? And a follow-up question, what are some useful tools that folks can access for dealing with jealousy in polyamorous relationships?
Sure. Metamor is your partner's partner with whom you do not have a romantic or sexual relationship. So I'm in a open V type relationship. So Lusty Guy is my partner, and his wife, Elle, is my metamor because she and I aren't really romantically or sexually involved. We're just kind of really cool friends. She's my metamor. And also there was a term that was just used, I'll throw it out there, kitchen table poly, which is when everybody is comfortable enough that they'll sit around the kitchen table, like the morning after. Emotions are your own to recognize and deal with. And I actually think that jealousy is actually very useful, because if you're feeling jealous, there's probably a really good reason. It means that you're afraid or insecure about something, and a brave person will turn towards that fear, because that fear is there for a really good reason, right? It's based on your life experiences and on how you've been treated in the past. And there's probably a good reason that it's there. Now, it may be outdated. It may be something from your childhood or an older relationship that's no longer in play. But then when you explore your feelings, you can figure that out. And then, hello, you're halfway to conquering your fear, which is totally fantastic. So there are all kinds of resources on dealing with jealousy. I've actually just 2 or 3 days ago, I redid the Poly Weekly bookstore. So if you go to polyweekly.com and click on recommended reading, I have several different sections, one of which is specifically on jealousy, and there are a couple of different books on jealousy that are very helpful. I actually like to do a really quick down and dirty exercise that we call the and then what. And if you go to polyweekly.com/blog and then search for and then what, you'll find it. It's super easy. So basically, you take whatever it is that's bothering you and say, you know, I don't like it when you're out with that person, with your new, let's say, girlfriend. And then you just ask yourself, well, what will happen if my worst fear comes true? You say, okay, well, I'm afraid you're going to like her more than you like me. And then you just keep adding and then what, and answering the question until it gets ridiculous. And then what? Well, okay, you're going to like her more than me. And then what? well, you're going to end up running off with her and leaving me. And then what? Well, then I'll be alone. And then what? Well, I'll never be able to find another date ever again, and I'll die from living alone to freak out. So you take it to that point, it really helps you to figure out what it is that you're really afraid of. I mean, are you afraid of being alone? Are you afraid of being abandoned? I have a big abandonment thing, so most of mine come down to, you know, die homeless and alone with 20 cats. but it makes it easier. It doesn't get rid of the feelings. It's not like you never feel jealous again, but it is really helpful for pinpointing them in a couple of minutes. And then once you've recognized that, I feel that most people experience that they feel that emotion no longer has as much power over them. It doesn't solve anything right that second, but being able to say, this is kicking off my fear of abandonment, and this is kicking off my fear of dying alone. And then you can have a conversation. Then you could start talking about it. Then you could start talking about, hey, this is what I can do for myself. And hey, this is what my partner might be able to do for me.
I wish you could see how many of us are vigorously nodding our heads.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This is great. This is great.
Yep.
Does anyone have any other suggestions for how to manage time and emotions in these relationships?
What? If anyone has advice for managing time, I'm sure we'd all love to hear it.
Right?
Like how much time you should be in an emotion? Like
No. She's
two separate things.
But, okay. Yeah. But what are we saying? Manage the time of what?
Can you clarify, Nicolette?
Yeah, like how you manage the time that you spend with your partners. Like, how do you make sure that everyone gets enough time spent with them?
Not well.
Yeah, it's tricky to do. It's tricky to
with
do.
With my partner's help. Because I'm a yes person. We'd be like, yes, I can do this. I have quadruple booked myself. Mm. Okay, I need to reel it back. For me, just developing the habit of taking a step back before I say yes to every invitation that my partners offer me, and looking at my calendar, like, I'm a 70-year-old woman at heart sometimes.
Google calendar.
Right, it's a beautiful thing.
Everybody sync Google calendar so that, like, you know what's going on, where it's going on.
Yeah. I tend to stay more fluid than anything. It's just like, you know, I go with the flow. We're gonna go to the beach, let's go to the beach. We're going to go up to the mountains, let's go up to the mountains. We're going to do the same day, I'm good. Let's just do it. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Google calendar thing, like, I was like, oh. Because first of all, I'm just like, no one in my life is like at that level. Well, one person is, but most of us are just like not that kind of person. And then also, like, there's a lot, I said this last, I'm in, you know, solo poly, so I'm part of this huge network of people who all have various numbers of partners, and so there would be no, there is no sharing of schedules, right? And it's a little bit for me in between the two. I have to kind of do the opposite of what you do, Jesse, and I know my partner's only going to be available one day a week, and I have to kind of like block out that I'm gonna want to see him, right? And so I'm kind of like betting ahead of time which day is going to be the best day, you know? And so like I have to have this whole block of yes kind of like blocked out for him if I want to see him. But then I do like to kind of go with the flow and be able to have, you know, somebody, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ahead is a long for me to plan, but you better not ask me today. I need like 2 or 3 days. But I have anxiety,
yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break, and just a quick 30-second break. And when we come back, I want to address that term solo poly, and I want to ask our poly educator to help explain to us what is solo poly, and also ask her to maybe address how you deal with time management and poly relationships. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Trans Positive on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM Portland.
Well,
5 seconds. All right, and we are back. So you're listening to Transpositive on KBOO Community Radio. Today we are doing the third in our series on polyamory and the trans and gender fluid, gender non-binary communities. We have a full house here. We've got seven people in studio, and we've also got a poly kinks educator, Cutting Minx from the podcast Polyamory Weekly, on the phone with us. And we are just defining what is solo poly. And also we are going to ask our poly educator to help us figure out, how do you deal with time management in poly relationships?
Well, I'll answer the easy one first, which is defining solo poly. One of the things I dislike about the solo poly definition is that currently we define it by what it isn't. And it's not ideal, but basically, solo poly is basically people who do have intimate relationships. They may be short term, they may be long term, but basically, what they don't do is have a primary style merging of lives. They probably don't. They don't necessarily look towards sharing homes and finances and co-parenting kids. So Aggie Says, who runs solopoly.net and who wrote the book on solo poly, talks about the traditional relationship escalator. So your solo polys may not want to follow all those steps in your traditional relationship escalator: the date, get to know someone, move in, share finances, yada yada. Now, that does not mean that they want to be treated as disposable or less than, or that they always want to be considered second or third in terms of your life. But that's sort of it's a little mushy, but that's my best definition of solo poly.
I'd like to jump in, if you don't mind.
Please, because there
are people who are solo poly as a matter of philosophy. Some people are solo poly by circumstance, right? And then there's people like me who are I'm a very open person, and I'm choosing to be solo poly right now because it's the best thing for me. And you said that it's defined by what it isn't, and that's true. Usually we define it as how it's not like other kinds of poly relationships. But for me, one of the defining characteristics of it has been a relationship with myself, something I did not develop well when I was in a monogamous relationship. And I have a sex and love addiction, so it's very easy for me to put all of my energy into relationships. So it's not just about the fact that I technically don't have a nesting partner, or technically my main partner and I don't share finances and we're not going to get married and have kids. It's also about like defining my life around myself, and making, all of my own choices, and sort of stepping out of the relationship, like not just escalator, but like culture a little bit. And I think that's true for a lot, not all solo poly people, but for a lot of them.
It sounds like for you, within the context of your experience, also as an ace, it might be a natural fit to also focus on solo poly as a way.
Especially if that's, like I said, again, it's part of my fluidity. It gets stronger or less than, and that can be confusing in a relationship, and it can be confusing, especially if you live with someone. You may not want to be touched today, you know?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So, Minx, what about time management? How do folks in poly relationships deal with time management?
Yeah, well, first I want to say I have heard that definition, now that I think about it, brain fart, that you're of solo poly, that your first relationship is with yourself, and I like that a lot better, so let's go with that. I like that. Time management, I am actually really anal about time management and organization, everything, and I still don't think I do it very well. I think that, I guess, what I can say is that I think it's important to know how the people that you're in relationships with want their time to be managed. For example, my sweetie and my metamor and I each have a chronic condition. That means that at any given point, for any given event, whether it's been on the calendar for 5 minutes or a day or a week or a year, we may not be able to go, even though we really want to. So it's really important that we always have to give ourselves the possibility of bowing out. I am not very good at that. I have made some very bad decisions and not done that. But it's something that we need to communicate to all of our partners, too, that, yes, we want to make these plans for tonight or next week or next month or next year, with the understanding that if something physical happens and I'm not feeling up to it, I may have to take care of myself. And it's not because of you, it's because of my physical condition. And also, some people are planners like me. If I put something on the calendar, that thing is, can I swear?
No.
That thing is fracking going to happen, especially if I've already bought the tickets. If I bought the tickets, I could be on my deathbed and I'm like, but I bought the ticket. As I said, not always making the best decision, but that's how I am. And it's really important that my partners know that about me. And so they know, you know what, maybe we're going to wait until the week before to buy the tickets, so Minx doesn't feel like she has to go. Other people like to do things last minute to pop in, like they wait till they have a good day or day free and they want to pop on or group text all their partners and say, hey, who's free to do something today? Some people really love the last minute invite. So I think knowing what it is that is going to be best for your partner, for each individual partner, is really helpful. Because for some people, you may only see them once a month, but you could spend maybe a whole Saturday together, provided you can do it last minute. Does that make sense?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, really
you know,
point.
One of the I didn't cue you before we had you on, but unfortunately, one of the challenges of terrestrial radio is that we don't have the same kind of freedom of speech that we do on podcasts. So thank you so much for your reserve. I wanted to get into, in our last 20 minutes, I wanted to talk specifically about how our trans and gender fluid identities intersect with experiences as polyamorous folks. And I'd just like to give everyone in the room and on the phone a chance to address that if they'd like to. Is there anything that's unique or challenging about being transgender in polyamorous relationships? And I might start by asking, first of all, with our guests in the room, the relationships that you're in, are you in relationships primarily with other trans and gender fluid folks, or are you in relationships with a mix of transgender fluid and heteronormative folks?
Okay, so in my case, like I've mentioned before, I'm in a hierarchical relationship, which means that I have a primary partner that's basically like my husband slash wife, but I also have other secondary partners that I don't live with, but you know, they're like my boyfriends and girlfriends. At the moment, my primary partner is the only partner that I have because I'm dealing with some mental health issues and I want to make sure that I am emotionally stable before I jump into another relationship. But you know, I've dated people of all genders. My primary partner is non-binary like myself. So, you know, the gender binary doesn't really apply to us, but I feel like, you know, other trans people or other non-binary people seem to be the best that understand me. Like, they seem to understand me better than most cisgender people do, I think, in my opinion. And so that's why I have an easier time, I think, with my primary partner. I'm not discriminating, though, because I've also been with very wonderful cisgender partners as well. It's just that right now that seems to be what's working best for me, is having someone who really understands me.
I think I have kind of the opposite experience, and it's an interesting question. Really thought about that before for me, but not really. This is just kind of how it happened, but my two primary partners that I have right now, who are really kind of my nesting partners, one is very much male and one is very much female. And that's not because I have intentionally not dated not cisgender people, but that's just kind of how it worked out. So no, I kind of have me in the middle of the spectrum and then the extreme ends on either side of me.
A perfect triad.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I date a technically cisgender person, but I have found lately that I'm mostly attracted to people who are queer in some way, whether they be cisgender or not. Usually, I find it turns out they're bisexual at the very least, right? and I do think that part of that attraction boils down to what you're talking about being understood, because I go on lots of dates. Let you take me out to a nice restaurant, sure. And a lot of the cisgendered people, especially men, unfortunately, that I have gone on dates with, essentially ignore or dismiss the gender thing. Like, I'll mention it, and they're like, okay, cool. And then just kind of like, that's it. And they don't ask me what my pronouns are. They don't ask me more about it. They just look a little uncomfortable, say cool, and just move on to the next thing. And in general, when queer people, you know, say I am gender fluid, like, oh, really? All right. So what pronouns? And you know, what did you find out? And, you know, they're into it and they want to know and they want to share that experience with me. And it's not going to work out with somebody if they are uncomfortable hearing about such a huge part of myself. So I know there are cisgender people out there that aren't uncomfortable with transness because they are my friends, but I just haven't been on dates yet with people that happens. I think because I'm very femme-presenting, it is extremely surprising to people. I think if I was more androgynous, it would be a different conversation.
Yeah, I've had that problem too, where because I'm very femme-presenting, people perceive me to be female. Yeah. And so I'll, you know, go out with men who think that they're straight, and I'm like, well, if you're attracted to me, you're not really straight.
What about Jessica? What about you? We haven't heard from you in a while.
All right, so I am a post-op trans. So I started living this lifestyle as male, not as a cross-dresser, not as anything except for a dom. And then I transitioned to female, and I still dom a lot. Nice. And you know, nothing but the top. Then you've got the whole where I had partners that were with me when I was male, and then when I transitioned to female, left. Oh. Because it was taboo, or they just weren't into it. Or now I was like, well, we're in relationships with male and female partners. What's the difference between me transitioning from male to female? And I find that it was a lot of debate on internal processes. You may be attracted to someone for whatever reason, for their vibe or for their gender or for their look or for anything, and then all of a sudden they change it up and you feel betrayed. Which is what I got back from a lot of my partners. They felt betrayed. They felt like, well, you presented this way this whole time, but then now you're transitioning to female. I mean, what else have you lied about? Aww. And I was just like, I didn't lie about anything except to myself. Yeah, you know, I lied to myself all these years, you know, about how I felt. And so it was definitely different. I find that my relationships now are much better. I think that transitioning to female was a huge, huge improvement, you know, in several different aspects, like communication being one of them. Mm-hmm. I remember having massive, massive fights and stuff in the beginning of doing this. I've been doing this for almost 20 years now. I feel very old in this room. and there was always fights about, like, you know, no communication, no talking, no nothing. And then when I transitioned to female and realized that communication is like huge, this is like, why wasn't I doing this before? has actually like improved my abilities to do polyamory and the way that they should be doing. Is basically it all really breaks down, and everybody said it here in the room, communication. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't matter exactly why you're poly. It doesn't matter why you present whatever gender you present. What really matters is if the people that you're around, the people that you're having intimate relationships with, all communicate with each other. That is the most important part. Yeah. If you don't communicate, then you have the problems, and then you have the arguments, and you have the fights, and then you get the envy or jealousy or whatever you want to say that. And I feel like it's more like, if you just turn around and just relax, you talk, you sit down, you say, hey, you know what? I have a little bit of a problem with this. I really think that we should talk this out. Can we talk this out? And then if the response back to them is like, there's nothing to talk about, then there's nothing to talk about. It was nice knowing you. You know? I mean, if you can't communicate with them, you can't communicate with them. You're not going to force them to. You can't sit around and say, well, no, we need to talk about this. We got to take care of this right now. And you know, it's not like that. If you turn around and come to them and they say, no, I can't talk to you about it, then there's nothing to talk about. And you just walk away from it. It's better to just walk away from those situations than try to blow your mind up and obsess and all that other junk. I just, you know, I come to this with a whole different aspect. I feel more relaxed in my journey, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, whatever you guys want. But I live in this world, and I'm going to enjoy this world. I'm going to enjoy the people that are in this world. There's a big giant pond to swim around in. I'm going to touch everybody in the pond. Everybody in the pond is going to touch me. And I'm going to figure out where I fall into that whole aspect. You know, I don't. I mean, right now I present as female. I am
very female.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica. What about you, Gwen? We haven't heard from you this whole show, Gwen. Do you have anything to say?
Well, I really have just been feeling everybody and what we're saying here, what the conversation is. And, you know, a lot of what I've heard is stuff that, you know, in communication, in talking to each other, in being in relationship, whether it's a close relationship or a friendship. I've been hearing, you know, stuff that goes across the board for everybody. This is, you know, what I mean, there's some calendar stuff, and there's the idea of working within a closer relationships, working with what that may bring up. And you could say, well, that's kind of more prevalent in poly than in monogamous relationships. But still, you know, the idea of talking to each other, the idea of communication, the idea of being basically honest, having some integrity in your life, goes across the board. You know, and it's amazing that there's more of this taking place in poly relationships than there is in the rest of the world, it seems like. So I think it's all work that we're doing individually. Like you said, like, you know, solo poly, and I'm like, wow, I spend a lot of time on myself and thinking about myself and my relationship to the world, and all of that, you know, is self-improvement. Mm-hmm. And it makes, I'm not going to be going out with a whole bunch of different people. It's just not, you know, a thing for me. But I am going to be the best person that I can be and have that integrity and do the work, because, you know, you see, even in basic friendships, there's jealousy. I mean, there's jealousy across the street when someone just looks at you, you know? And so these are all dynamics in our beings, in the, you know, this is the case of being human, being on the planet, all of these interactions and these feelings. So I've really just been listening, and I really appreciate the honesty that's been put forward here, and also what we're talking about.
Yeah, and this kind of brings me to a question that I feel is so important to ask everyone. How has polyamory helped you learn and grow as a person?
Let's start with our poly educator. Give her a chance.
Yeah, definitely.
From her in a while.
Oh, my goodness. Where to begin? I've definitely learned a lot about myself. What's funny is, back when I was monogamous, I thought I communicated really well. Oh my goodness, I had no idea how much more I needed to learn about myself and about listening to really be able to communicate well. And I still fail on a regular basis. But I really love how much I've learned about myself and how much I've learned about other types of people. I don't think, I mean, I'm a cis het white woman, you know. I'm only a little bit weird by many people's standards, and but I decided early on that I wanted the podcast to be a resource for everyone, and so I had people writing and calling in saying, "Hey, you haven't covered asexuality. Hey, you've never really covered this. Hey, you've never really covered that." And I'm like, I don't know anything, but okay, come on the show. Let's talk about it. And I don't think I would have had so much exposure to so many different types of people and what their personal experience has been walking through life if I hadn't done this podcast and if I hadn't been a part of these communities. And folks, I come from Texas. I no longer talk to my family because I came out as poly and they won't have me. So I come from a land of intolerance, and the fact that I am that I've learned so much about so many different paths that people can take in life has truly been a gift to me.
Mm-hmm. This may sound weird, but I relate to that extremely well. I rarely had any gay friends, and I just always looked gay all my life. I was always, they called it tomboy. I was just like, whatever. This is what I wear. I played sports all the time, so it didn't really even, like, my. I didn't need to change clothes. I went to a place that had uniforms. I was like, cool, uniforms are great. This is great. I wasn't tripped up about, it's not, it's, it just was always like that. So when I went to a school, somebody was like trying to inch, hey, you know, like, do you know what being gay is? I was like, what are you talking about? Oh my, people die in my, people die where I come from if they ever did anything what you're talking about. Do not talk about that thing. And then I was just like, okay, whatever. But when it happened, I was like, oh yeah, sure, I'm staying here. And I stayed with that person for 4 years. But other than that, I was always around people who just, the language, the polyamory language gives a lot of structure to the conversation when you want to talk about something with someone who, and so I just kind of just moved on. But other than that, I just kind of, I come from that same place, and I really try to work with these guys because, like, we're cool every other way. But if they keep saying, if you say I'm a girl, apparently that defines you as just a whole, you know? And it's just like, okay, let me not be in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I may share a little bit about something that I've learned from polyamory, I think it's kind of helped me to understand real love on a deep integral level. Because, I mean, I can't count how many monogamous people have drilled this idea into my head that if you really love someone, you'll only love them. If you really love someone, you'll be jealous when you see them with other people. And I found that that's not true. I can love someone and love other people as well. I can love someone and be happy for them when they're happy with other people. And I think that's helped me to understand that love isn't possessiveness. Love isn't owning someone. Love is positive feelings you have for just being able to share your life and experience with someone.
Thank you. So we've just got about 2 minutes left on the show. So I just want to give people a chance if they've got any final thoughts. Before I do that, though, I want, Minx, I just want to give you an opportunity to let people know how to get in touch with you. If they want to listen to Poly Weekly, where can they find it? If they want to learn more about, you know, that I know you do education, you do workshops, that sort of thing. Where can they reach you?
Sure. Best place is our website, polyweekly.com. If you want to listen to the podcast, just go to the podcatcher of your choice, whether that be Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Overcast, whatever you listen, whatever you use, search for Poly Weekly. You'll find us there. And you can always reach out at cunningminx@gmail.com or at polyweekly@gmail.com. I'm equally slow replying to both of those. But we also post content on facebook.com/polyweekly. We're on Twitter @polyweekly and @cunningminx, and pretty much on those handles everywhere else online.
Thanks. So, and I want to thank everyone for coming tonight. Does anybody have any last thoughts, any last words they need to get out?
Yeah, I want to say one thing. Love is not an emotion. Love is a mindset. You got to turn around. If you love someone, you will do what it takes to be with them and be around them. It has nothing to do with feelings.
My partner once told me, I chose you. I sat down and thought about my life and what I want for my life, and I intentionally chose you for my partner.
That's right.
Mm. Yep.
Nice.
Thanks. So we are going to be back transpositive in 2 weeks. It's going to be the fifth Tuesday show, which we're hosting this month. And Gwen, what's that show going to be about?
This show, we are going to have Stephanie Lorenko on, and it'll be an interview about her transition in life and her family.
Great. All right. Well, that's going to be in 2 weeks on Transpositive. Stay tuned next week.
Nope. Mistake. That's the following show. The next show I'm still working on.
Okay, great. Well, stay tuned. Next week is Preference with Alan Silver. And so thank you so much for joining us. Minx, thank you for joining us. And you've been listening to Transpositive on KBOO Community Radio. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a good night.
Thanks, everyone. Thank good you. Night.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
I almost shoved my KBU membership coin into this pinball game.
Wait, what?
You said KBU membership coin?
Yeah, check it out. Haven't you got one yet? Every KBU member gets a membership coin.
Oh, dang. Maybe I forgot to renew this year. What are the benefits?
Becky, learn to use the internet. Just go to kbu.fm/member benefits to see all KBU's partners. I will have you know that one of them is Cider Riot.
Oh, no way.
Oh, yes way. By the way, Tender Loving Empire, Oregon Historical Society, and Cotton Cloud are also on that list. You know, just get back to me when you renew your membership. I got this game to play.
You are making a difference in your radio community, and we want to
thank you
with our member benefits.
Become a member today at kbu.fm. Just click the donate button.
It's easy. We're still looking for business partners, too. Email underwriting@kboo.fm for more information.
KBU membership has its benefits.
Yeah.
Ow!